Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
The future is a hefty responsibility and not one that we take lightly. But then taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.
Warning, this episode contains foul language and mentions of murder, poisoning, possible infanticide, and the hanging and burning of witches.
For all things strange and unusual, wicked and witchy, toil and boil, and everything itchita capita magica mystica. Each week we get to sit down with a friend and chat about something weird, and during spooky season, we get even weirder. This week we are revisiting one of our all-time favorite topics, witches. Now, here at Weirdo Headquarters, we love witches. We know that witches aren't evil, and that magic isn't dark, and that witchcraft is a beautiful practice that each of us here today use in our everyday lives. But sometimes, children, witches can be scary. Witches can use their power in dark ways, and sometimes witches can even kill. Today we're talking about some infamous witches throughout history that have helped give black hats and brooms a very bad name. Whether it's because they did a bad thing, or because their craft was so strange and misunderstood, they had to burn for it. So throw a ring of salt around you, place your broom next to the door, and whatever you do, do not light the black flame candle. My name is Ashley, and this is my co-host, Lauren.
Hello, witchy weirdos.
And today we are joined by, of course, who else? Our resident green witch and curator of Witchy Wednesdays, Laura LaRue.
Hello, weirdos. It's
such a good witch cackle.
I was going to ask, so we are a week and a half ahead of our listeners, so it's only October 5th, but how is everyone's spooky season going thus far?
It's been going great. So the tail end of my spooky season is going to be so packed with stuff. My brother's getting married like the first week of November, so like wedding stuff is just piling up. Yeah. So we did a bunch of spooky stuff right when October started. We went to Disneyland and saw like all the like pumpkins and Halloween decorations.
It's my favorite time to go to Disney.
It was so good. I mean, it's one of my favorite times at Disney. It's sort of my least favorite time for the Haunted Mansion.
Same.
Because, exactly what Ashley said last
week. I wish
they
would just leave it alone. But, you know.
Because it's spookier the other way. I mean, I do get it.
I mean, it's full on Christmassy right now. So it's a little, I don't know. They got pumpkins everywhere.
Weird.
So. Yeah, right. I don't know. But we went. It was spooky. It was great. And then we did like a pumpkin patch this last weekend, like out in the countryside.
Wonderful.
And it was really, really sweet. And I'm full up on my fall vibes.
Yes.
Lauren, have you got to do anything yet?
Not yet. This coming weekend, I am also going to go to a pumpkin patch because there's one that I don't have to drive 2 hours away for. It's lovely. In Moore Park, which Smart. Is much closer to where I'm located. I hate going to the ones up in the mountains. I vented about it last week with Ashley, but I don't want to drive far. So pumpkin patch this weekend. I'll hopefully get a little produce and some pumpkins and some fun stuff. And then... yeah, I've been watching a lot of horror movies, so that has been fun. I decorated the morning of October 1st, so even though the apartment doesn't allow too much, it still feels spooky in here, which I like, so I'm feeling it. I'm feeling ready.
I know, I'm in a rough spot because when I moved last year, I threw away all my Halloween decorations. Not all of them, but most of them, because Aww. It was just one of those things where it was like, I can get new stuff. And now I'm yeah. like, I have no money. And I'm like, oh, here's some bats to throw on the wall. Like, I don't really have the funds to get as spooky as I want, which is fine. I mean, this month we're more focused on the nuptials, the wedding. So
the wedding. Yeah. Yes. That is important.
I feel like once that's over, because that's like right in the middle of the month, that's the 15th. So I feel like once that's over, it's going to go full force, hyperdrive, spooky season for me. So
Halloween will basically be your honeymoon.
Exactly.
Exactly. The best. Oh my gosh, I love it. So excited.
Today we're talking about witches, some wicked. Every time I say wicked now, I think of John Travolta.
It sounds like, I was going to say that, it sounds like you're doing a John Travolta.
The wickedly talented.
Wickedly talented.
Adele Dazeen.
Adele Dazeen.
That's one of my favorite things that's ever happened.
It really will never not be funny. It is so good every single time.
We got to be alive during the time that happened. Like, that's just a rare treat. We're so lucky.
I remember.
We should count our blessings.
Watching it live and just thinking, what on earth did he just say? That was not a name that I've ever heard. Yeah. Oh, it's Idina. I see.
Is he having a stroke right now?
Oh, it's Idina Menzel. Like, what? Where?
Adele Nazeem, Adele Nazeem, who is a witch.
Who is a witch?
In Wicked. So, you know, it all comes back together in Wicked. Elphaba's a good one.
Today, we're talking about witches, and I'm going to go first because my iPad's dying. I'm going to be talking about an entity known as the Bell Witch. And some of the stuff I'll tell you is going to sound familiar because the Bell Witch inspired several horror movies, including The Witch, An American Haunting, Poltergeist, specifically the second one, Blair Witch Project, and a few aspects of the haunting that was portrayed in the first Conjuring movie. So, one of my most prized possessions is a rare book called An Authenticated History of the Famous Bell Witch by M.V. Ingram. And actually, the full title is An Authenticated History of the Famous Bell Witch, The Wonder of the 19th Century and Unexplained Phenomenon of the Christian Era. There weren't a lot of books back then, so you kind of had to put everything in the title.
That's a mouthful.
Fact. Yeah,
there was no like back cover that told you what the book was about. The title really had to give you all of it. So
all of the information.
I have a 1961 reprint, but the book was actually published in 1894.
That's awesome.
That is so
right.
So cool.
It's an old book. The introduction of the book is a letter dated July 1st, 1891 by former Tennessee State Representative James Allen Bell of Adairville, Kentucky. James Allen Bell was the son of Richard Williams Bell and the grandson of John Bell Sr., whose name you're going to hear a lot in this story. So essentially, he's a descendant of the people that this happened to. And in the letter, he explained that his father had met with his brother John Bell Jr. before his death, and they agreed that no material he had collected should be released until the last immediate family member of John Bell Sr. had died. And you'll understand why he felt this way after I tell this story.
Okay, I'm ready.
So, John Bell was born in 1750 in North Carolina, and he married Lucy Williams in 1782, also from North Carolina. And in 1804, their family, John, Lucy, and their kids, Jesse, John Jr., Drury, Benjamin, Esther, Zadok, Elizabeth, Richard Williams, and Joel Egbert.
Goodness gracious.
Hello.
Built a house and started a farm on 100 acres located on the Red River in Robertson County in what is today Adams, Tennessee. I almost went there on my way home from Nashville the other day just to see the Bellwitch Cave, but I couldn't take more driving than I was already doing. So,
fair.
To this day, descendants of the Bells live in Tennessee and other southern and midwestern states, and you'll hear from one of them later. So, the Bells lived on this farm peacefully for several years, creepily enough, 13 years to be exact, with no issues whatsoever. And in those years, they prospered. They increased their land to 328 acres. They cleared a bunch of fields for planting. John Bell became an elder of the Red River Baptist Church. These fools had three more kids on top of the ones they already had. They had a very happy and successful early life there, but one day, in 1817, John Bell encountered something really weird and creepy when he was inspecting their cornfield. He encountered a creature sitting in the middle of a row of corn. He said it had the body of a dog and the head of a rabbit, and it looked right at him.
No, thank you.
Thank you. Yeah.
Nope.
He had a gun because it was the 1800s, and he shot directly. Everyone had a gun, and it's Tennessee, so nothing's changed.
Oh, yep. same.
He shot directly at the animal several times, but it vanished. It seemed to not be affected by the gunshots at all. And it was weird, but like, whatever, weird-looking dog ran off. Who cares? Well, that night at dinner, when John told his family about what he'd seen in the cornfield, they started to hear beating sounds on the outside walls of their log home. It was distinct enough that all the men went out to check the perimeter, but they found nothing. And as the mysterious knocking sounds increased with frequency and force each night and the boys kept going outside and catching no one, some more strange sightings were occurring on their property. John's son, Drew Bell, reportedly approached an unknown bird perched on a fence that flew off as he, like, approached it and was of extraordinary size. And he said, like, you know, basically his whole life to the day he died, he'd never seen any bird like it.
Oh, goodness.
His daughter Betsy reported seeing a girl in a green dress swinging from the limb of an oak tree. Now, I do not know if that means swinging as in the fun kind or the sad, scary kind, but
regardless. That's a good point.
Yeah.
I was imagining a child on a swing hanging from a tree, like a little wooden swing, but
I was picturing the other hanging. Of just like feet swinging there.
Right?
Like, yeah. Ooh, yeah. Gosh, I'm just thinking of The Conjuring now. Okay.
See? There's going to be a lot of things where you're like, I've seen that in a movie. I've seen that in a movie.
Right.
Dean, one of Bell's slaves. Oof. Yeah, they had slaves. They lived in Tennessee in the 1800s. Dean reported being followed by a large black dog, especially on evenings when he went to visit his wife. But they could never actually catch this large black dog that people reported seeing on the property. So the knocking was persistent. It happened every night. Then more sounds started happening. They heard gnawing on bedposts, but they never found any rats. They heard the sounds of dogs fighting. Like, in the room with them, it sounded like dogs were fighting, but they had eyes and could see that there was nothing in the room.
Ugh, that would be so unsettling. Eek.
They reported hearing chains moving across their wood floor. Sheets were pulled from the beds while the children slept. Their pillows would be thrown on the floor. The children's hair started to be pulled. They were getting scratched. The daughter Betsy seemed to be getting the worst of it, as there was an instance where she was slapped and pinched and stuck with pins.
Oh, my God.
It was around this time.
Wild.
It's too much. It was around this time in the early days of the strange events where John Bell began experiencing paralysis of the mouth, which will come around again later.
Oh, gosh.
That's a new nightmare for me now.
Truly. The other night, I might have to bleep this out. The other night, I got high and I was sitting there watching TV with Joe, and all of a sudden, my hand like was resting on my stomach. My hand sort of like raised by itself and then went back down, almost like it just sort of like flittered up. And then I all of a sudden got crazy paranoid and I was like, I don't have control over my body anymore.
Oh, yikes. Oh, my God.
Jeez.
And that thought never went away until I wasn't high anymore. So anyways.
that's the rough part about being high.
Maybe it was a witch. You'll think or about. Maybe I was too high. So
a little too high.
Yeah. Sure.
This family was experiencing shit nightly and they were terrified. They asked a family friend who they trusted, James Johnston, to help. They asked him just to stay the night and tell them what he experienced. And apparently, he experienced a bunch of shit that night because the next morning he sat down at breakfast and was like, hey, what?
Hey, what the
What's
hell
happening
was that?
Here?
I have to head out.
He said he experienced the sounds, that his covers were taken from him and his wife a few times during the night, and at one point he was slapped hard. And when Ooh. That happened, he jumped from the bed and said, in the name of the Lord, who are you and what do you want? He didn't get a response. However, they also didn't experience another thing for the rest of the night. And because of this, he said he believed it was a, quote, spirit like in the Bible, which could either be a demon or an angel. So,
right.
Which one do you think lives here?
Right.
So word of the activity in the house started to spread, and people started to turn up to witness it for themselves. People came from far and wide, and the activity did ramp up. So along with the bumps and scratches and chains and dog fights, they started to hear a voice. It was a faint, whispering voice, too weak to understand, but according to the family and other witnesses at the time, it sounded like a feeble old woman singing hymns. Which, like, you couldn't tell me a scarier thing.
Yeah, no, thank you.
That is just nightmare fuel that is in every horrifying movie. It's either a little child or an old woman singing a hymn. And I'm out. I have to check out.
There's something so scary. I mean, the sounds of dogs fighting would just be startling. But, like, to hear a small voice singing to you, something that's supposed to be comforting but, like, is 100% not, I think is so much worse.
Yeah.
That is true.
It's like it's something trying to lure you almost.
Pretty much.
Like,
come little children. Oh, it's that.
It's that.
It's Sarah Sanderson luring everybody in. Ugh. It sounds nice, but it's not. Okay.
Also, I literally have like goosebumps while you're telling this story. Oh. This is so much fun.
The story
I'm so scared. Thank you for bringing us the best, scariest story.
As the voice started to become clearer, the slaps and pinches became a lot more rough. The children especially would start showing their parents large red welts in the morning when they woke up. The family did start trying to communicate with the entity, which some people in the paranormal community would say is a huge no-no, but also, what the fuck are you supposed to do? It's 1818. Do you find an Airbnb? Like, I feel like at that time, you're just kind of in the shitter.
Yeah, you're grasping at whatever you can do. Yeah.
Exactly.
Yes.
So as they attempted communication, the voice became clearer and clearer and strengthened over time to the point where it became a loud and unmistakable voice. It sang hymns, quoted scripture, carried on intelligent conversations. And one night, one of the most famous occurrences in the house, the voice quoted word for word two sermons that were being preached at the same time on the same day, 13 miles apart. Reverend James Gunn of the Bethel Methodist Church, followed by the sermon of Sugg Fort. Like,
how did they substantiate that was happening at the same time?
They didn't know at the time. It was only after. They knew that this thing was like preaching a sermon, but it was only after. I think they found out about the Bethel Methodist Church first. Like someone talked to, because back then it was like, what'd you see? It wasn't like, what'd you see at the movies? It was like, what'd you hear at church?
Right. Gotcha. Yeah. No, that's freaking terrifying.
And they put it all together and were like, ugh. Hello?
I hate it.
The voice supposedly loved religious arguments and would share gossip about activities in other households in the community, which is fabulous. I would
spilling the tea
for a paranormal entity to tell me all the
petty
drama.
Ghost.
Yes.
I feel like if I become a ghost, if I, you know, don't pass on to anywhere and I can haunt, I think I'll be a gossip. Oh, right, I think I will absolutely be a little gossip ghoul.
Gossip ghoul. That's our new show.
Why isn't that a TV show? Good gravy. Okay.
I would whisper in their ear and be like, your neighbor's drunk again.
Sandra's cheating on her husband. Look at the window.
One night, John Johnston, who was James' son, the family friend who stayed to witness the shit show for himself, came over saying he had an idea. He had heard about the sermons. He had heard about all this stuff. So he wanted to test the witch. At this point, they were definitely calling the entity a witch. And I'll talk about kind of why later. So anyways, John decides he's going to ask the witch something no one in the family could even know. So he asked the entity what his Dutch grandmother in North Carolina would say to her slaves, again, yikes, but that's the life, if she thought they had done something wrong. And apparently the entity responded immediately and with a Dutch accent said, "Hut tut, what has happened now?" And John turned white and left and never came back to the house.
Yikes. I love that the ghost does impressions, though.
Oh, yeah. Like, yeah. Gossip. Perfect. Impressions. Like, this, like, take the show on the road. Like, why
oh
are
my
you?
Oh, my gosh.
This ghost just loves so
what
attention.
An entertainer.
Yeah.
Like, if SNL existed in 1818.
This entity.
Boy, do I have a cast member for you.
Now do a guy from New York. Hey.
Now do Abe. Do Honest Abe. There was also a time where an unnamed Englishman showed up on the property and asked if he could investigate the haunting. I say unnamed just because they did not put his name in this, like, extremely detailed book, but they said that he was from England. He was a skeptic. He wanted to investigate. He didn't buy any of the rumors of what was going on there.
Sure.
The next morning, he left immediately and did not say goodbye. Like, the family woke up and he was gone. And he had written the Bell family later and said that the entity began mimicking his parents' voices.
Oh, my God.
Nope. That's awful.
And that he even believed that it had visited his family in England, as they ended up having a few nights of strange occurrences there after it happened.
Oh, my God.
And he also, in the letter, apologized for his skepticism.
Like, wow. Sorry I wasn't on board. Yeah. This is absolutely happening.
Instant karma. Got it.
Yep.
Now, the witch was not mean to everyone. She seemed to specifically have it out for John and his daughter Betsy for some reason. In fact, there was one point where Betsy was sort of dating a boy. But, you know, back then that meant they, like, went on walks sometimes. And
right.
The witch did not approve. And anytime she'd spend time with this boy, his name was Joshua Gardner, the entity would get violent and torment her. And not just at the house. She had experiences in town as well. And actually, one of the famous landmarks of the family's farm that still stands in Adams, Tennessee today is the Bellwitch Cave. You can actually go and, like, there's signs for it in the town. It's like a tourist location. It was a cave on their property that Betsy and Joshua would often play around when they were much younger. And then obviously, like, try and meet up at and, like, flirt when they were older. And when the violence ramped up, that was where Betsy would go to try and escape it and kind of sneak off with Joshua. But eventually the tormenting started to take place there, too. And they just couldn't escape it. It would happen everywhere along the river, in the fields, at the cave. And she ended up breaking off her own engagement on Easter morning in 1821 because she literally couldn't take it anymore. Supposedly the entity straight up told her not to marry Joshua, which, like, if it was me, I'd be like, done.
Sure.
Like, if some haunting was pinching me and poking me and hitting me and was like, don't marry that guy, I'd be like, whatever you say.
Yeah, but it also doesn't sound like this entity has her best interests at heart.
Very true.
It just sounds
that's
like it's fucking
true.
With her.
Yes. That's very
not looking
true.
Out for her.
Yeah.
It's also, you should know that the man who was, like, out for her at the time, that, like, wanted her hand in marriage, was a former school teacher of hers.
Ooh.
And that's who she ended up marrying.
Oh, no.
So that's the worst. Yeah. But anyways.
So male teachers have just been predators for a while, yeah. I guess.
Yeah. I mean, older men in general.
Not all.
But nope. Yes. Every okay. male teacher.
every male teacher ever.
So most of the time, the entity displayed only kindness to John's wife, Lucy, and John Bell Jr. The voice would sing hymns to her, sing lullabies to John Jr. It would bring Lucy fresh fruit. Like, please. Oh. And that was who she usually gossiped with, too. Like, if the entity was sharing gossip, it was usually with Lucy.
Oh, my gosh. Here's a peach. Let's talk
about the Smiths. Yeah,
that's like a Casper the Friendly Ghost for some yeah. people yes. in the family. Like, seriously. Okay, you got a new BFF.
Uh-huh. But she referred to John food. Bell Sr. as Old Jack and told him she intended on killing him.
well, there it is.
I guess it's and not there it like is. Funny, There's but it evil. Kind of is. Like maybe John Bell sucked. I don't know.
Yeah.
So there maybe were some other incidents of note. For example, another family friend stayed with them. His name was William Porter, and he claimed that something climbed into bed with him in the middle of the night. It was a solid thing. He was able to grab it with the sheets and intended to throw it in the fire, but he said that its immense weight and terrible smell prevented him from succeeding. So that's terrifying.
Yikes.
The fact that it was so heavy that he couldn't lift it and it stank, like, no.
Ugh.
Nope.
But to wrap this up, the Bell Witch was intent on killing John Bell, according to the family, constantly vowing to kill him. Bell had been experiencing episodes of, remember, the paralysis of his mouth?
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Twitching in his face and difficulty swallowing for over a year at this point, and it was growing worse and worse. By the fall of 1820, he was confined to the house where supposedly he was constantly being slapped and having seizures. I feel like taking him to a hospital, but I don't know. It's yeah. 1820. Like, maybe that's yeah, not right? an option. I don't really know the sitch.
Like, that sounds awful.
John Bell slipped into a coma on December 19th and died the next morning on December 20th.
Wow.
And his family found a vial of strange black liquid in the cupboard in John Bell's room. And to find out what it was, they supposedly tried it on the cat, and it killed the cat.
Sorry, that's not funny, but it is.
It's not. I mean, funny. It's just poor kitty.
Give it to the cat. I'm sure.
Yeah,
it'll
give
be
it
fine.
To the cat. See what
just
happens.
Give it to the cat.
And it killed Let's the cat. Test it. So they were like, "It's poison, oh. obviously." And actually, after the cat died, they claimed that they heard the voice say, "I gave old Jack a big dose of that last night, and that fixed Ooh. Him."
Yikes.
So then John Jr. threw this mysterious vial in the fireplace where it burst into a bright blue flame and shot up the chimney. What?
Jesus.
Okay. I'm sorry. What is happening?
Oh Almost God. Cartoon-like. Yeah.
Yes. Seriously. Is this Disney?
At his funeral, which was apparently one of the largest ever held in Robertson County, Tennessee at the time, attendees say they heard laughing and the singing of drinking songs the entire time up until everyone left the cemetery.
Wow. This ghost really hated this guy.
Hated him.
Seriously.
Hated his fucking
I will do everything bad. Goodness.
The entity pretty much disappeared after his death. Small things would happen, but nothing like when John Bell was alive. In April of 1821, the entity visited Lucy, who she seemed to care for, and told her that it was leaving but would return in 7 years. And the entity did return in 1828, and most of its return was centered around John Bell Jr., who, again, the entity seemed to like. And he claimed, and John Bell Jr. was the one who made the deal with his brother to not release any of this, like, information that they were kind of writing down about the Bell Witch until after the last descendant was dead, because they feared for basically this curse returning.
Retribution, yeah.
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 So he claimed that he discussed with the entity the origin of life, civilizations, and the need for a major spiritual reawakening. This is all so fascinating.
Yeah.
Yeah.
The entity supposedly predicted the Civil War and a few other major events. In 3 weeks, the entity left again, and told John Bell Jr. it would visit his most direct descendant in 107 years. And that year would be 1935, and at the time, the closest living descendant was Nashville physician Dr. Charles Bailey Bell, a neurologist who was John Bell Sr.'s great-grandson. And as far as we know, she didn't return. At least nothing was ever reported. And it's not like Dr. Bell was unaware. Like, he had the notebook with the alleged talks between the entity and John Bell Jr. in 1828. He was well aware that she was supposed to show back up again, but if she did, he never said. Today, as I said earlier, there are many descendants of the Bell family, one of which being Lucy Bell Butler, who was named after John Bell's wife, Lucy, which is her, like, great-great-great-grandmother. And she said, growing up, anytime something creepy or weird happened, the family would just naturally and nonchalantly be like, oh, that's the Bell witch. And she believes that the witch not confined to the farm, that it's not a haunting of the area, but a haunting of her family. And she believes the family is what is haunted and followed. She says her and her daughter have seen the black dog of legend with the strange face. She said there was a giggling girl that ran around their family home at night and would play with her daughter's toys. She said that the entity was kind of up to her old tricks, very sweet and loving to the people she liked and not so much with the ones she didn't. She said that the witch did not like her father, who was an actor in Memphis, a real smooth talker, handsome sort of swindler type who may or may not have had connections to the Florida Mafia. We don't know. She said one incident when she was little, her dad was about to host a gathering at their home. And he purchased a new stereo system that cost him a pretty penny. And the night before the event, they went downstairs because they heard noises. And they found their living room filled with thousands of crickets all climbing into the stereo system.
Oh, my God. Okay.
And they completely ruined the stereo system.
Oh, man.
Shit.
Lucy said she thinks... she said, I think she punishes people that needed to be punished, but she also took care of the ones she liked. And I thought it was interesting that she said needed to be punished and not that she thought needed to be punished. Like, her dad must have been a real piece of work.
Yeah.
Mm. Yeah.
Even Lucy's husband, Larry Butler, was a skeptic when they first met, but has since changed his mind. He said he's witnessed Lucy's things moving, like hanging jewelry and one time a tassel hanging from a lamp that was spinning rapidly in circles.
Huh.
So real quick, you may be thinking, okay, this whole story sounds like a haunting, not a witch. Why is it called a witch?
That's exactly what I was thinking.
There's two reasons for that. Well, one, the entity straight up said that it was a witch, which is why they started calling it a witch. And at one point early on in the haunting, before the major injuries and deaths occurred, the entity actually said it was Kate Batts. Mary Catherine, a.k.a. Kate Batts, was an outcast in the Red River community. So she was an actual woman who lived there. She was married to a man who was paralyzed from the waist down, and she did the majority of the hard physical labor on her family's farm for him. And she was supposedly kind of a strange bird, and there were rumors that she was into the occult, but never really any proof. Like, nothing was offered that was, you know, solid, that showed that she was into witchcraft in any way. Mm-hmm. In the early years of the century, Benjamin Batts, her brother-in-law, did have a dispute with John Bell over the sale of a slave. She strongly denied any connection to the haunting, but the entity responded to Kate and is still even called Kate by a lot of people. So that's interesting.
Yeah.
But two, I think it's also because a lot of shit was blamed on witches at the time. Like, a lot of shit was blamed on witches.
Of course.
Right. Bad harvest.
Yeah, they were always bad harvest. Always the scapegoat.
If a child disappeared, a witch took it. You know, like if a child
disobeyed,
a witch.
There was so many things. Thinking about, you know, John Bell, for example, with his face paralyzation and the involuntary twitching and the trouble swallowing, the seizures. Like, it's pretty clear he had some sort of neurological issue. But back then, I'm sure it seemed a lot like he got poisoned by a witch. you know, like.
Right. So they didn't know what to make of it. So they're like, well, it had to be that witch.
And it possibly could have been connected to the entity, or it could be that he had an issue, epilepsy or something that wasn't medically taken care of. And there was also a case around this time in 1868 about Tom Clenard and Dick Burgess. They killed a man named Smith. The first name was either Charles or James. It was a long time ago. Okay. Anyway, they worked with this guy, and according to them, he claimed that he had had the powers of witchcraft and would use these powers against these guys. And supposedly, he said he got the powers by praying at the altar of the Bell Witch. So they killed him. Ooh. And the jury of State versus Clenard and Burgess returned a not guilty verdict on account of witchcraft.
Oh, my lord.
But in reality, it was just a stranger in a small community that two guys didn't like.
Yep.
Yeah.
So.
Yep.
Anyways, that's the story of the Bell Witch. Did she exist?
It is quite a story.
It's such a fucking story. I'm sorry I talked for so long. It's so crazy.
I'm so glad you did. It was so much fun.
It was so worth it. That was the story we've been waiting for.
Well, and it like opens up so many questions. Like, do you think, like you said, is it a witch? I don't know. A lot of it sounds like demonic possession.
Yeah.
But like this haunting through the centuries and like this... Right. Entity seeming to travel the world in a moment's notice. Like, this is some all-powerful being that just, it raises so many more questions. Like,
and,
I love that.
Witches don't deal with the devil. Witches don't believe in the devil. However, there are people who believe in the devil who practice witchcraft.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so like on the whole, witches don't, that's not like in our vocabulary. We don't believe in the devil.
Right.
But there are plenty of people, especially back then when the devil and God were very real to most people. Yeah, maybe there was a witch who put a curse on the family. And maybe that curse was demonic possession. Like, I don't know. But she's a scary bitch. Yeah. Regardless. Right.
She is. It is so fascinating.
Yeah, that was really great. Way to start us off.
I know. Way to kick things off, girl.
No, now I'm like, I got to throw some extra into mine.
No,
I know.
You really
I'm like,
don't.
Let me cushion
I've
mine
been
with.
For forever. So I knew mine was going to be long.
We're slowly like bringing in facts that are not facts at all.
You're like, and then one time and she flew across the room.
She flew into
mine
the distance
could teleport
and someone
too.
In a mask.
Yeah.
Yep. Add some murder and spice and everything nice.
Well, Laura, you're next and you're talking about a bad bitch too.
Yeah, and actually I feel like it's going to be a really nice stark contrast because your first one was very scary, kind of what I picture when I think of like evil witches. And then the woman I chose was French poisoner and witch by the name of La Voisin,
which also is just the best French name.
Yeah, it's really
good, right?
Voisin.
It looks like poison, but just with a V. And I was like, ooh, is that why? And it's like, no, that's just like a shortened version of her last name. But So I'm going to be talking about the witch La Voisin. She was living in Paris in the late 1600s. And yeah, like I said, instead of living on the edge of society or living in the woods, like kind of what I picture when I picture a witch, she was the absolute opposite. She was living in high society, like really living it up, rich. She was famous pretty much all up until the day it came crashing down in what would later be known as L'Affaire de Poison, one of France's largest witch hunts, which I had never heard of until I researched
this.
I want
a perfume with that name.
Ooh, L'Affaire de Poison? Yes, please. Just careful around the eyes.
Don't get it in your mouth. Call poison control.
Yeah. So originally she was Catherine D.A., and not much is known about her early life. She was born in 1640 and most likely grew up poor, like because you don't know her parents. She claimed to learn how to tell fortunes at the age of 9, and that's a little unusual, but again, if you think of it, she probably grew up poor, and so she probably did it as a way to kind of support herself.
Yeah.
At the age of 20, she married a merchant by the name of Anton Mauvaison. He sold jewels and silk, but unfortunately he was utterly incompetent.
Great.
Yeah. Catherine found out he was in massive amounts of debt and his business was going bankrupt. So instead of falling back into a life of poverty, she just went to work doing what she knew. She started reading fortunes for a small circle of the French upper crust. On top of fortune telling, she learned chiromancy, which is palm reading. I didn't know that. And face readings. She became an herbalist and would make tinctures and potions that would soothe aches and pains. And through that study, she actually became a midwife and later started providing abortions, which were illegal at the time.
Wow.
So, oh my goodness.
Yeah. Way to go, Catherine.
Is a bad bitch.
Right? At the beginning of her career, all this was kind of done under the loose idea of secrecy. It was well known that she did these things, but people were probably paying extra for discretion, so you couldn't really pin it on any one person. And when the Catholic Church did put some heat on her for her, like, witchcraft and her fortune telling, she claimed she was merely using the gifts that God had given her. She kind of
nice
just
move.
Flipped it on its head and was like, yeah, no, it's just like, nope, it's not witchcraft. It's a God-given gift. I thank the Lord for it. She went
you
to
know,
church
you
every
know God.
Sunday. Yeah.
You know that guy. It's fine.
And you know what? They were fine with it. They were like, okay, yeah, that seems right. So they really kind of just
so
let
smart.
Her do her own thing. By the late 1660s, though, things started booming for Catherine. She was wealthy. She was famous. She was fully supporting her family of six easily. They had, like, moved to this giant mansion in the countryside. And she had basically taken her one-woman, like, witch business and turned it into, like, a network. So, because she was getting so many clients, like, she couldn't keep up with it. So, like, she had women working for her as midwives, women working for her as herbalists, basically going out when she couldn't. She was busy with clients who were among the highest of the aristocracy in France. And I looked up some of the names of these people, and it did not help. like, Olympia Mancini, Comtesse de Soissons. And,
yeah, you're like, I wonder if I know any of them.
Yeah, no.
Like, oh, JK.
They're all clickable links on Wikipedia, but nope, I have never heard of any of these people. And if I try to say them, it's just going to sound hysterical because it's all French names and I'm terrible at my French pronunciation. So she was having these fancy pants people come to her house where she would, like, perform her magic for them all day. And then at night they would have these, like, wild, lavish garden parties where it was just the booze was flowing and it was well known she was a bit of a drinker, just a straight up alcoholic. She was rumored to have at least six lovers.
Okay.
Love that for her.
I know. Right?
Get it, girl.
A couple of which were like, hey, you should maybe take care of your husband and then we can be married. But I gotta hand it to her. She's like, nah, we're good.
Nah.
Like, my husband's my husband. You're my lover. Don't confuse the things. And don't get it crossed. So as her business as a fortune teller and simple herbalist grew, she started to notice a pattern with a lot of her clients. They always wanted something more. Someone to fall in love with them or someone to die that they could inherit a mass fortune, or maybe I wish my spouse would disappear so I could marry somebody else, like that kind of thing.
Right.
So she started offering potions that she claimed could do just that. It's less like aches and pains, tinctures. She's moved away from herbalism now and is just straight up making magical potions that she says will grant your ultimate desire. She would brew love
potions. She's getting into love potions.
Yeah, she would brew love potions or make good luck amulets. And again, always with the public disclaimer that only with God's will these work.
Of course.
Yeah,
right.
She would even tell her clients to go and pray to certain saints, like, just to keep the church off her back. And that kind of gave her free rein to get into some darker stuff. She started selling poisons and got very, very good at it. Okay. To this day, it's unknown how many deaths she's responsible for, but some say...
Child.
Some say it's around 1,000.
Oh my God.
Whoa!
And she was just slipping under the radar?
Oh yeah, like, it was, again, amazing. It's that everyone knew she was a poisoner, but because the rich people were the ones paying for it, it was like, you know, look the other way, like...
Totally.
A well-known secret.
She was so brilliant with her clientele, man.
Oh, yeah. Some say it was, over 1,000. Some people claim it's over 2,500, honestly, to this day.
Goodness.
Yeah. This, and again, this is also, like, through her network. So it's not just her single-handedly, like, it's also, like, her business of selling poisons to people.
Oh, yeah.
So that's, so,
that
like, this is just a full-blown business for her.
Wow.
So, needless to say, her morality is maybe taking a bit of a dip here. she started charging big, big bucks to perform what they call dark masses. She would employ priests, some of which were her lovers, others who she probably blackmailed, to hold satanic rituals in the catacombs beneath her home. All this with the illusions that her clients could pay for their deepest, darkest wishes to come true through, like, the power of Satan. So we've said, like, witches don't normally go for Satan. This witch was very into Satan.
Love it.
Like, their altars would be made, not made. Their altar was a naked human woman.
Okay.
Willing.
Like,
she
drama.
Was in on it, too. They would wear these, like, insanely gaudy red velvet robes with gold embroidery. And just, like, it was really over the top.
I'm very into this.
Oh, yeah. No, it was, I mean, but, you know, it's a dark side. It's a real, real dark side. Because what I'm going to say next is unsubstantiated. So you could decide to put it in or leave it out. But.
Okay.
It said that these dark masses each was sealed with the blood of a newborn baby.
Woo!
Yeah. There are some people that claim that at the end of all this, her catacombs were exhumed and they found baby skeletons. Oh. Other people say, like, that's not true, so it's really back and forth. But also, if you think about it, she had a network of midwives that could get it doesn't say that they were alive, so maybe it was like, you know,
stillborn situations.
That's
what I was thinking in my head, which I know is horrible, but I was she would have resources for that. That's so sad.
So it's all fun and games until someone's killing newborn babies.
I was like so into this with liberals, the robes and all the rituals, and now I'm like, oh, never mind. I don't like this anymore.
That's the dark side. She was awful. But ultimately, it's a poisoning that she didn't even commit that was going to turn out to be her downfall.
Oh.
Oh, no.
So here we are now. We're going to enter the L'Affaire des Poisons. And it was a scandal that rocked French nobility. It began with the trial of Madame de Brinvilliers, who was accused of working with her lover to murder her father and brother so she could inherit his estate.
Hmm.
So King Louis XIV became absolutely terrified by this case that he might become a victim of poisoning. So he began having all his servants taste test his meals. That's like kind of where this started. You see that in film and TV sometimes.
Yeah.
But yeah, so he's really scared. So he gave the chief of Paris police permission to conduct what amounted to basically a witch hunt, and they just started arresting women left and right.
Anyone who probably had whispers about she could be a witch probably got arrested.
Right. Well, and it was like, now they're arresting basic, simple fortune tellers, people who are actually just providing herbalism. Like, it's the
right,
it kind of is just like, I saw her,
they all were under
do
attack,
something that I don't understand, arrest her, question her, see what she knows. So basically it's just finger pointing at this point. One woman leads to another woman, and because she has this large network, eventually Lavoisin was arrested. When she was arrested, it said that she probably wasn't tortured, which is kind of what you'd expect when a woman in the 1600s is accused of witchcraft at the time.
Yeah.
But instead, the chief of police knew that she straight up was an alcoholic. So he kept her intoxicated while jailed the entire time, probing her for details on who she served and what those services entailed. And because she was blackout drunk, she confessed to literally everything.
Damn.
Oh, man. Come Which, on, girl.
You know, like, if I'm going to go to prison, like, sure, have a bottle of wine waiting for me, and this might be a lot easier for everybody.
I mean, true.
So while she's confessing everything, it comes out that her most high-profile client was Madame Montespa, which was the official mistress of King Louis XIV.
Oh, wow.
She was like his number one mistress for like 10 years. And then when his interest started waning, he started kind of going after somebody else. This woman, Madame Montespan, hired Lavoisin to brew a love potion at first to like get the king back interested in her. And right, then she was like, no, you need to actually start brewing me poisons. At first, it was believed to kill just the new mistress, but mm-hmm, then plans were actually found that, nope, it was to kill the king himself.
Whoa.
So Lavoisin was so close to actually just murdering the king of France.
Oh, wow.
Damn.
Right?
That is wild.
That would be so insane.
Right?
Yep.
Like, there are unconfirmed plans even where, like, she poisoned a piece of parchment and, like, got it to the court, but, like, it didn't make it into his hands to be poisoned. Like, there's a lot of unsubstantiated claims of, like, how close she almost came to killing this
man.
Guy. Man. Ugh, that would have been wild.
Like, so I don't, I'm not going to say, like, I wanted it to have happened.
Right.
But
there's like a small part.
I would like to see the timeline where that happens.
Yeah.
So I can just see what happens, you know?
Yeah.
Yes. Like, I want to be on that timeline because what a fascinating story. My God.
Oh my God. So obviously with this new bit of information she revealed while totally trashed, they were like, sorry, you're super guilty. So she was sentenced to burn at the stake for witchcraft. Her death to set an example for the women of the court and the necromancers and fortune tellers doing business in Paris. She went to her death in early 1680 after the Chambre Ardente, the fiery court, which is a great name. I just have a terrible French accent.
It sounded like you said al dente, and I was like,
That's what I thought too. Oh, like the pasta? So how I cook my noodles. I see. Okay.
They found her guilty, worthy of the harshest punishments the court could deal out. And on the day of her death, it says she didn't go quietly. Some say she begged for mercy. Some say she shouted her innocence. But most say she cursed the families of each of the men responsible for her verdict. Yep. In total, over 300 people were arrested in the investigation, including 36, like Lavoisin, who ended up being executed for their crimes.
Wow.
Most of the French nobility, including Madame Montespa, escaped punishment thanks to the king, who was worried that if people learned the truth, that his court was teeming with liars, murderers, and witches, the peasant class would rebel, or worse, England would use the scandal as a reason to invade. So basically, he swept all the aristocracy's sins under the rug and just, you know, murdered the peasants.
Wow.
Yeah, and so for a time, Catherine Montfaucon was a murderer, fortune teller, entrepreneur, high priestess, prisoner, witch, and even more powerful than the king himself.
I fucking love that story. Also, it just makes me think of today when you're like, the aristocracies were fine, We killed the peasants. It's like, oh, like today when rich people get off like with slap on the wrist and poor people go to prison for the rest of their lives. Yeah, cool.
The people who are actually doing the murdering and like using these poisons, they're not going to jail. It's the people who made the poisons. Not. Yeah.
Yeah.
We're just, I would say they're just trying to make an honest buck, but I guess they're not really trying to do that, are they?
No, they're not. Yeah.
Not so much.
You know, it's called supply and demand. If there's a demand for poison, that's just being a shrewd businesswoman.
Yeah, that's just capitalism.
She was a great entrepreneur, is what we've learned. Like, just an evil, poisonous entrepreneur. But man, she knew. Like, she saw.
Oh, yeah.
She saw the need. She saw the clientele from a mile away and was like, yep, this is going to be my life and my business, and I'm going to do amazing things.
I want this movie. Why don't we have this movie? Yeah. And I want it to be like The Great on Hulu.
Ooh,
yes, yeah. Like kind of like funny, fun, yeah,
because they're long dead. We can laugh at them.
The satanic rituals are kind of like a little bit not great, but the rest of it would be beautiful.
Yeah,
well, we can silly up the rituals, you
that's
know,
that's true.
Silly them up.
I mean, because honestly, they probably were so freaking like
fabulous.
Ridiculous.
They were fabulous. A naked woman adorned with sushi.
I mean,
probably wine goblets. If we all, she probably had wine everywhere.
Red velvet,
definitely wine
goblets. Dead babies.
The robes.
I mean,
oh well, okay.
These are a few of my favorite things.
Ashley,
what? It's Halloween.
If you hadn't said, if you hadn't said the last one, I would have agreed with the song. Oh gosh.
I'm just saying.
That's rough.
I think we all know what Ashley's going as for Halloween this year.
Yeah. I got to get my red
velvet robes
out.
And giant velvet, goblets of wine.
Yeah.
Part of the, get a great goblet. You got it.
And a naked lady as a platter.
Right?
Yes.
I put on my
I'm here for it.
Accoutrements on.
I love it.
Yeah. Oh, Lord.
Fabulous. I'm obsessed with her. How do you say your name?
Great.
Voisin?
La Voisin. So this is going to be really ridiculous. What? So does anybody remember this song?
I keep thinking
song?
Of Little Mermaid.
I was going to say, does anybody remember the song from Little Mermaid?
La Poisson. La Poisson. Poisson. Yep. It was 1,000%. Yeah, which is fish. I was just thinking that the whole time. Like, is her last name Fish?
But it's spelled exactly the same, but instead of a P, it's a V.
Right.
So, yeah, no, just sing
that. A P,
that,
not a V.
Yeah, just sing that song whenever you want to say her name. Also, French is so hard to pronounce.
French is so hard.
I'm sorry if you have any French listeners. It's a beautiful language when French people
it
speak
is.
It. It's a garbage language when Americans speak it. And
La voix.
It's so beautiful to listen to. I just don't, I don't have the talent at all. But no, it is so
I'll do toilet.
I picked this story and like reading it for, I've been reading it for a week and I was like, this is going to be great. And then when I went to practice reading it out loud, I was like, oh no,
oh, no.
I can't say any of this.
Yeah. Well, we're with you. So it's fine. We're all trash together. Okay. Well, now I am so happy I switched to my shorter one, Ashley.
I
switched at the last second. I had no. Oh my gosh. Both of your stories were great. And I had a longer one and I switched to my shorter story, but now it really works. So, hello.
Hi.
We are into the final witch. I am going to talk about a witch named Tituba, which again, I think that's the correct pronunciation.
Yeah.
Tituba?
Was there?
I've heard Tituba before.
Or Tituba? Yeah. I've heard both, and so I never know.
Or Tituba.
I like Tituba better.
Tituba.
Or who?
I made that pronunciation up. I have a question. Was Tituba in the Bible?
Yes.
Was the name of a witch in a Bible? A witch in a Bible? I said that so
a
dumb.
A Bible somewhere. One of the Bibles.
One of the Bibles?
I'm sure. It's interesting because, I mean, this witch is everywhere. Like, I'm going to get to that at the end of, like, all of the pop culture references especially. But I'm looking back. I don't think I found anything.
Okay, that's fair.
I'm excited because I know this name. It's, like, one of those things I've heard this before. I literally have no idea about this witch. Like, I know nothing about them.
Okay. Yes. There are lots of pop culture references, but not always the story that comes forward. Like in American Horror Story, there in the Coven season, there was definitely reference to her, but it was just sort of like, oh, we are ancestors of this witch. So today I am talking about Tituba, who is a very famous witch in pop culture, but her story has been skewed and changed a million times. Mm-hmm. And so I tried to go online and find what historians have pieced together of her actual life, what they could find, basically her story when she was in court, which we will get to, just all of the things that they know for sure happened. And then the rest is based on hearsay and just sort of like the fallout of what happened after she had her day in court. So some of this, you know, is actual history and the rest we're kind of just piecing together. But either way, she's fascinating. There's a reason she is used in so many books and television shows. So Tituba was an enslaved woman who was the very first to be accused of witchcraft in Salem.
That's why I knew her name.
Yep. The she very first.
So familiar, but I had no idea. Yeah.
Now you know why you know the name. The very first to be accused of witchcraft in Salem. She gave a crazy testimony in court, which is another reason that she's famous, talking about a coven, a devil's book, evil animal spirits, all because she had to explain away some odd symptoms that took over a group of Salem girls in 1692. And when people in the town were on the hunt, something had to be told. So what do we actually know about this woman and her testimony? So Tituba's story, as potentially convoluted as it is, she was definitely a part of the Salem witch trials. So Tituba was definitely a woman of color. We know that. And she was likely an indigenous Central American who was an enslaved worker in the house of Reverend Samuel Paris in Salem. He was a Puritan minister. So
cool guy.
Really just working under a really cool loosey-goosey guy.
I don't even need to know anything about him to know that he was cool and chill.
Puritan, super say chill. No more.
You really wanted him to be your boss. And at the time, slavery in the colonies was on the rise, and the West Indies was rapidly becoming Europe's most important center for the slave trade. And Reverend Samuel Paris bought Tituba in Barbados, where she had been enslaved since her capture as a young child. God. So very sad part of the story, just slave her entire life. So he brought her to Massachusetts in 1680 when she was a teen. And at some point, she married another enslaved man named John Indian, and they had a daughter named Violet. But there's just not a lot of history on them as a family, and I think they had to keep a lot of stuff under the radar. So that is the harder stuff to find, and that's where historians are just sort of like, we're putting it together the best we can. But
there's not a lot of paper trail for enslaved people. Yeah, no. Unfortunately.
Yes. But she did have a family at one point. Hopefully, you know, she had little pockets of
happiness
with that. Yeah, that's all you can hope. So she was caring for the Paris children. She was working for this family and was mainly the nanny. Those were her main duties. And Samuel Paris's daughter and niece were among the first girls who began to show some strange symptoms in Salem in 1692. It was always... That was the first thing they looked at whenever there was a witch hunt, whenever, you know, all of these thoughts started going and they thought witchcraft was involved, was usually young girls were saying, like, I saw something weird, or like, I feel weird, or I'm just, they're saying strange things. And it's like, okay, who's been talking to you? So these girls who were members of the Paris family had been playing a fortune-telling game that involved dropping an egg white into a glass of water. And supposedly the form the egg white took in the water would help predict who the girls would marry and sort of show shapes of their future lives.
Yeah, and it's literally just the same way that we played MASH.
Yeah.
1,000%.
It sounds like a sleepover
game.
We
all loved MASH.
Exactly. Lies a feather, stiff as a board. Like, imagine if our aunts were burned because they taught us how to play MASH. That's essentially what we're talking about here. Oh,
my gosh. You're saying
that's all my notebooks were filled with.
Yeah. You I'm going to live in a trailer, but I'm going to have an Escalade, and I'm going to marry Jonathan Taylor Thomas, and we're going to have 18 kids.
You better put burned at the stake as an option on that, Nash, because that's what's going to happen.
Add that on the final
witch,
line.
Witch, you're a witch.
So we say fortune telling game. It was MASH. Yeah. It was MASH in the MASH in the 1690s, everybody. So they're dropping their egg white into the glass of water to see what shapes they're seeing. But apparently one day the girls saw a coffin in one of the glasses. They started freaking out. Ooh. And the story goes that they began barking like dogs, babbling, speaking in tongues, and crying hysterically. Like, it took them basically a full day to be consoled. And so it turned from this fun little game into, what did they just see? Did they see the devil himself in this water? What is going on? Who taught them this? And even though she most likely had nothing to do with the girl's fortune telling, Tituba was blamed.
Right.
Because somebody had to be blamed. Right. And Mr. Paris was furious, and he didn't want them to be playing the fortune telling game anyway. He had no clue where they had learned it. And he found out that Tituba had baked a witch cake, as he called it, from rye meal and urine and fed it to the girls.
What?
But really, he was calling it a witch cake. I believe Tituba said that if anyone ever seems to be possessed, this was like a belief or, you know, a practice that she came from, that this is what they had to be fed to calm them down. It was just some sort of ritual that she had. Maybe it was witchcraft, but at the time she just sort of was like, oh no, this is my tradition. I was trying to help them.
It's supposed to counteract the craziness.
Yeah. Right. Whatever they're going through. But of course, Paris lost his mind because they're playing the game. A cake with urine has been fed to them. He was praying and fasting in an attempt to cure the girls. So he was mad that they were even fed in the first place. And so he beat her terribly in order to get her to confess that she did everything, that she was a witch, that she was practicing witchcraft, and that everything is her fault behind this girl's behavior. We don't know if it was because she was being beaten or not, but Tituba did confess. And with her confession came a long, crazy story about having to serve possibly the devil. I know we were talking about the devil worship. The story goes that she said the devil, but other stories say it was just a very tall man in a black suit and gray hair who was pushing her into something, that he was some sort of entity. He definitely wasn't a real, you know, person who lived in the town.
Right.
But then the story has been changed a few times to say she possibly said devil or Satan, and maybe things got lost in translation even, because, you know, English wasn't her first language. So mm-hmm. She basically said that this entity in this black suit was telling her she needed to hurt the girls, and that she had been practicing witchcraft with them, that they were practicing riding on sticks and doing spells, and that there was also a black dog that would appear to her in the night to make sure she was doing her job.
Always that black dog.
The black dog. Dog is back. The bitch is back. If we think, you know, black dog could have been a bitch. Okay,
for sure.
Anyway.
Hey, I get it. That's clever.
Anyway, this was enough to, of course, spark hysteria in Salem. And Tituba was formally accused of witchcraft, along with two other women who were arrested at the same time and brought to jail and then brought to court. And at the time, again, she was like the first accused of witchcraft. So this was a big deal. But there had definitely been a lot of talk of witchcraft. You know, yeah. Like she was basically the person who took it all on first, because people in the town were saying, well, I think witchcraft is real, but we just need somebody to admit it, or we need some better evidence. But like, I really think this is happening. And she kind of took it for everybody and got things started. So that was a huge deal, but also these three women were the easiest scapegoats and the easiest targets, because this was the first woman of color. Previously, anyone who had been accused, not even formally, but just, you know, gossiped about in town, had been, you know, white and just people hanging out in the colonies, definitely not an enslaved person. So she was the first person of color who had confessed and had been, you know, pointed at. But then the other two women with her, Sarah Good was the name of one of the other women. She was a very poor beggar. She lived on the street. She had a lot of debts, so she was also an easy target. And then another Sarah, Osborne, she was involved in a dispute with her children over their dead father's estate and reviled for possibly having an affair with one of her servants. So all three women were kind of outcasts of the town, easy targets, easy to call them evil, deviants, whatever.
Well, especially almost if you have, like, oh, go on.
Oh, I was going to say, almost there's something to gain, too, if
that's exactly like, what I was
they are
say.
Called. Okay, yeah, like there's something to gain if they're out of the picture, out of the way, tried as a witch,
I talked about this last season on our episode called,
You're usually so good at knowing the names. I thought it was just going to roll off your tongue.
Me too. I thought it was just going to appear to me. But it was the one where we talked about Jaws, the witch, and...
With Isaac. Exactly. I don't remember the name, but when we did movie chat.
Yeah, I talked a little bit about the Salem witch trials and how most of the people, Tituba was not one of them, but most of the women who, and men, the one man, Giles, who were killed, were people that, you know, other people had something to gain from them. And a lot of the times it was property.
It's kind of all you had back then. What do you want, my old shoes?
That was the thing to fight over. So these three women were targeted and they were brought to court, and Tituba, you know, came up first to give her testimony, and it was bizarre. It was disturbing. I mean, again, this is what we actually have historical evidence of it, are these is exactly what she said in court. And it's basically, she just rambles on and on about the things she's seeing, the things she's been working on, the potions that she's been making, and that this evil entity has been telling her what to do. Nobody knew what to do with it. It just, it made everybody feel insane that this woman was standing up and claiming these things. And a lot of it included animals. She said that she had two rats, a one-third red rat, a black rat, the black dog, some cats, and she said they all were her servants. They served her and helped her do the devil's work.
Okay, Snow White.
I was imagining Cinderella, but yes, Snow White is the one who actually had all the animals. I was imagining the little mice coming to help her, but yes, basically any Disney princess who had the animals on her side. They all served her. She confessed to signing a devil's book that was basically selling her soul and giving her the ability to do all of these things and serve this higher power. And then people decided, well, she's a woman of color, so she must be practicing voodoo. And that's why we've never heard of this. And that is the true evil. So that is where the story kind of changed to. It's definitely voodoo that she is practicing. And for years and years, and in basically all of the pop culture references, she is a practicing voodoo witch in all the stories, even though she never claimed that. Right. And actually, most of the stuff she was saying is not in line with what we've learned about voodoo. So that's just kind of interesting. But
that's just sort of us misunderstanding another culture's practices, basically.
1,000%
Lumping it together with something else that we know. But
yeah, we're like, well, we know about voodoo, and that's creepy, too. So
We know about voodoo. It's really creepy, and her skin is a little darker than ours. So there we go.
That was how it went.
Yep. So she, the trials went on for a long time because they were just like, you are saying the craziest things I've ever heard in my life. So it went on for a few weeks. It was getting out of control. She was, you know, starting to threaten people. I feel like she was almost like using it as an entertainment point. Like by then she's like, hey, you guys are, you're putting me up on the stage, so I'm going to keep talking about
it. Well, and I also wonder if part of her was just trying to spin this crazy web and get out of being murdered.
She didn't want to be murdered. She didn't want to be a slave anymore. She felt like being in prison and doing this trial was getting her out of the life that she hated. So
she's
all of a sudden
like famous, and people are listening to what she's saying. Like, I mean,
exactly.
It's a little twisted, but like, this is probably the most power she's had
in her life.
In her life. Yeah.
And you can't fault her for that. Like, that that makes sense. It's like, okay, and I'm out and I'm saying what I want to say, and people are taking me seriously. So she trial went on and on. She remained imprisoned in Boston. And then finally she was indicted as a detestable witch. And she languished in jail for more than a year. Paris, her boss, of course, refused to pay her bail. Yeah. That really sweet man. And more and more indictments and arrests piled up as Salem went into a townwide panic. Again, we kind of mentioned this earlier, just finding like every woman, every potential witch. That's when things just like really spiraled. And it was like, everyone's a witch, especially if they can read and write and have some intelligence. Then, as things went on, about after a year, again, where she was in prison, Tituba actually recanted and said she made up everything because her master beat her and tried to force the confession out of her. And basically, at this point, the trials had wound down a little bit, and the governor of Massachusetts just said, let's stop the arrests, things are getting too crazy, and let's just let Tituba sit here for a minute and I'll figure this out. I don't know if she's lying or telling the truth. But an anonymous person came forward and paid Tituba's bail. She went free after 13 months in jail, and then her history just stops. We have no clue where she went after that. She didn't go to work for anybody in Salem, not even anyone in Boston. She just kind of vanishes. She took her freedom and she ran with it. And then stuff started to change in Massachusetts and people started to give Salem's accused witches their property and restitution and everything. But an enslaved woman with no property and no rights obviously was given nothing. So she vanished and said, I'm going to start over somewhere. Who knows if she changed her name, if she got to run away with her family, we don't know. But that's why she is so easy to fictionalize now and, you know, make into more of a dramatic person than she was, even though her court moment was phenomenal. And I'm obsessed with her for it, for all of the things that she said and what she was doing, especially because her boss sounds like the worst. But her story definitely has become, it's an American Horror Story, you know. Yeah. She's known as this voodoo witch. She is a character in The Crucible. She's in a bunch of different novels where she is brought up as a witch and the Paris family history will be mentioned. And then it's, you know, she's kind of this side character, like, oh, well, the Paris family has that Tituba slave and witch, blah, blah, blah. So she pops up everywhere. She's become basically a black voodoo priestess, even though it is believed that this was not her at all. Everything has changed over time, and that she was more, it was most likely that she was Indian. But, you know, that's what happens when your story kind of gets swept under the rug. Yeah. But she held the power in those Salem witch trials. And unfortunately, she is the reason for other women being accused, which is, you know, as we know, very unfortunate and sad that these innocent women who just had a working brain were being accused. But also just, I sort of love this power that she harnessed and how she just got up there and spoke her truth for a little bit. I can't fault her.
Yeah.
And then was free. She got what she wanted.
That's not the ending I was expecting. No. I didn't know how it ended. Nope. So yeah, I assumed the worst.
The moment she said that she had been lying, they, for whatever reason, took her seriously. That's the part I don't understand and the part that I wish there was more history on, because it's like, okay, everyone else also said they were innocent for the most part and still got burned. So I don't know what it is. I don't know what that part of it is, but they were sort of like, okay, hang here for a sec, and then we'll decide what to do.
Like, no one really benefited from her disappearing, like from her being killed. Like, there was no property, there was no money, there was no nothing. So there was no one really like fighting for her to be killed, except for maybe her boss, but he seemed to be kind of like out of the picture.
She was the story. She was what was sensationalized about the entire event. So, I don't know. She kind of made it famous. So it's kind of like you see now with court cases, and like if a crime is committed, like people all of a sudden start thinking like, oh, well, that crime is being committed all over the place. And I'm trying to think of like an example, but I can only think of like when there was poison in aspirin. Do you remember when that happened?
Yeah.
Uh-huh. Once, and it's never happened again. Yeah. But like everybody still to this day is like, oh, be careful of poison in your aspirin.
Mm-hmm. Or the guy, the poisoning in trick or treat candy, where like that's like a huge thing. Yep. But really the only time, documented time, that that's happened and there was a casualty was a man who killed his own son for his insurance money.
He had a target and a reason behind it, as awful as it was. But it wasn't in everyone's candy.
Yeah, and he gave it to him at his house. It's not like he gave it to a trick-or-treater. But still, to this day, they're like, check your kids' candy.
People sensationalize that story. It runs rampant. Like, that's what happened with the witch trials. Like, this woman was probably beaten so badly that she would say, pretty much anything. And then when she realized people were listening to her, really went for it. And it just, people went fucking nuts with it, you know?
Yeah. Yep. And so it goes. Yeah. But wow. Yeah. So she's, yeah, if anyone thinks her name sounds familiar and you didn't know this story, because I did not know, you know, what was behind the story. She is in so many different novels. She's mentioned in TV shows, most recently American Horror Story, obviously, but also very, you know, famously in The Crucible, I would say, where she was definitely, to them, she was conjuring up spirits, she was into sorcery, she was into Satanism, all things she learned in Barbados and brought over to Boston and was practicing in the woods. And that's how she got caught, because the children saw her and, you know, got an interest in it. So
I like to think that she just hated those kids so much that she baked a cake full of urine and was like, it's what we do to help people. Yeah.
This is my tradition. No. It's so funny. As I was telling this story, I was trying to read it with the facts I was given in the history, but in my head, absolutely. She put urine in that cake to laugh at those damn kids. Right. It reminds me of The Help when Octavia Spencer's character bakes poop into the pie that she gives to her boss, and you're just like, hell yeah. Oh, and that's kind of how I thought of her.
I hope those kids hated the taste of that pea cake.
No, I hope they liked it.
No, I hope they liked it, and they developed a weird kink.
Man, I really wish I could get some more of that cake. Yeah.
What's the secret ingredient?
From it, it feels like we have Tituba the character and Tituba the real life person. And I'm glad Tituba the real life person, like, again, we don't know what happened to her, but I really like to think she got some peace. Like, she didn't die. She had a better ending than I would have thought. And I hope she got some peace.
I hope so, too. I hope she was able to unite with her husband and daughter. Yeah. I mean, we're all having these hopeful thoughts. And in reality, like, maybe she was caught, like, just outside of the woods and murdered. Like, I have no idea.
Someone could have taken, you know, justice into their own hands in this case, for sure. But
paid because bail, again, that would explain why they paid it anonymously. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Oh, see, I didn't even think of that.
Ashley,
I thought maybe
crushing
that
our hopes
was, like,
and dreams.
I know. No, that is so. Yeah. Unfortunately, that's probably so real, because the governor had just started to say, like, "Hey, we're chilling out on all of this witch hunt stuff. So, like, everyone relax." And there was probably some angry person out there saying, absolutely not. I'm going to kill this witch." So, yep, that could be.
But she lives on in our hearts. Yeah.
She does live on in our hearts and in TV shows and books and all the things. But no, I do wonder what was happening with those girls and why they were speaking in tongues and losing their damn mind. If Tituba did do something, or if they were just being crazy girls, it seemed like it was scaring people in the town enough that, like, something was going on. But that's the thing I'm most
curious about. How old were these girls again? Because my 4-year-old nephew has followed me around, like, barking like a dog because he thinks he's a dog again. It's just like, all right, you're a dog today. Cool.
I think they were
preteen,
teen,
right?
Oh,
were they
like okay.
preteen? 12, 13? Yeah, maybe like 12. Yeah. Which, I mean, yes, they absolutely could have been barking like a dog. Kids do that, but it seemed, I don't know, just the way people were reacting, it seemed sort of
more serious.
Out of pocket, but will we ever know?
No.
No, we will not.
No. So we'll speculate wildly.
Yeah.
Exactly.
It's fun. It's fun.
It's fun. That's what we do here. But that is all the time we have this week for Keep It Weird. Thank you so much for listening to our show every single week. And of course, thank you so much, Laura, for coming on for one of our spooky season episodes. And of course, you are our guest.
So honored to be here for the spooky season. Oh my gosh, this was so much fun.
You can catch Laura's work on our Instagram every single Wednesday for Witchy Wednesdays.
Never stop.
And at this point, so this comes out next Friday, do you want to give your new Instagram handle for all of your spooky stuff? Yeah.
Absolutely. So I finally kind of have something to promote on this show.
Yeah.
So if you follow us on, or if you follow Keep It Weird on Witchy Wednesdays and see my normal Lucky Luru handle, that's just my personal account. You can still follow me there if you want to see pictures of like my dog and my travel and my friends and my family. But I'm now creating a separate account that is strictly for witchy content.
Yes.
It's Leaves of Lore. And you can follow me through the Keep It Weird Instagram. I'm sure you guys will post links.
We will be tagging you every Wednesday.
Please, please, please. And it's just going to be lots more spells and recipes. And I mean, honestly, it's just going to be a place to appreciate nature and maybe kind of get into a little more herbalism, the medicinal and it's just going to be a fun exploration of all things that grow on this wonderful planet. So if you like nature, if you love witch stuff, come on by, give me a follow, and like all my stuff. Thanks.
Best
I know
witch
I will.
Town.
You have like two Thanks. Posts, and it's already one of my favorite accounts that I follow. So
I know. I'm slowly building it up. So it's one of those things by next,
it's new,
whenever
it's
this
new.
Comes out.
Yeah, by the It'll time this episode comes out, you'll blown. Have many more things, and it's
so
you're
much...
you have to have a starting point.
Well, and that's just it. I have so much content on my phone right now that it's just like it needs a place to go.
Yeah.
So yeah, no, it's gonna be great. So much stuff.
Love it.
I also love it. I was going to promote whatever we were going to do next week, but it's actually kind of going to be a surprise for us because surprise, surprise, Ooh. I'm far too. Busy, so we're kind of changing course, and Lauren's gonna take the reins for a week here in October while I get married. And
yes!
Woo-hoo! I'll have
yeah
more.
So we're gonna have like a mystery guest and
mystery
topic
guest,
but
mystery
it, we'll make sure
it's gonna be great. It's gonna be spooky,
it'll be
it's
Halloween-y.
Gonna be fun. Yeah,
yes,
how mysterious.
But in the meantime, follow us on Instagram at Keep It Weirdcast. Our Twitter's at Keep It Weirdcast as well, and Facebook. And check out our merch store at www.keepitweirdpodcast.com/merch and get yourself a shirt. You can also please donate to our Patreon at www.patreon.com/keepitweirdpodcast. And if you donate to our Patreon this month, whether you are a current patron or a new patron, you will get points for our Halloween giveaways where we are going to be giving away signed copies of The Feminine Macabre Volume 2, free merch, and a grand prize of a Zoom party with me and Lauren. And to get those points, you can donate to our Patreon. You can like and comment on our Instagram posts for the month of October. And you can tag us in pictures of yourself celebrating Halloween in whatever way you celebrate Halloween. So there's many ways to get points. Mm-hmm. For the Halloween giveaways, and I encourage you to do all of them.
Yes, yes, yes.
Love it.
Sounds
yes,
like a blast.
Yes. In the meantime, what's our sign off today? I almost said fellas.
So I've
fellas.
So I'm not even gonna lie. I've been here a couple times, and my eyes just went wide about 30 seconds ago, going, "Oh crap! I didn't plan a sign off." So I'm just going to give my best witchy happy Halloween shriek that I
yes.
can give.
Perfect.
Please,
let's see if
I'm
I can
obsessed
do it
with
again.
That.
Okay. I mean,
put her in the movies.
Put her in the movies. Warner Brothers
Damn.
Is across the street. Someone call oh. the press. Jesus.
That was phenomenal. Oh my gosh, Laura.
Okay, well, and also in our best witchy voice,
keep it weird.
Go on.
I need you to record a voiceover that I can play outside of my apartment door to scare people off. That is what I mean.
Oh my God.
So good.
So happy.